And you hit on the biggest issues, right? I mean, blood clots, migraines is another one. You know, if you're a migraine sufferer, you're at much higher risk for blood clotting problems, being on synthetic hormones. And then, of course, the detox SNPs and all the information and the data that we have now about our individual predispositions. Absolutely. Absolutely. And especially since these companies can test us for such an inexpensive amount.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As an anthropologist and naturopathic doctor, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body, balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring.
Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/DE Legacy. See you there.
When it comes to our health as women, there's probably one topic that we all have a level of familiarity with, and that is the use of the birth control pill and exogenous hormones. And of all the things I talk about in my practice, I have to say this is the one where women are searching for the greatest level of honesty and clarity around the influence of the pill on their long-term health. Whether we're talking about the birth control pill or hormone replacement therapy, the effects and implications for susceptible people are often the same. They're in fact quite devastating. Now, this is not to say that the birth control pill is problematic for everyone, but there are a subset of people where it is a particular challenge. And for most people, there are things that we can be doing with respect to our health on an ongoing basis that will assist in decreasing the burden and risk of being on the pill long term. This has been heralded as a medication and as a tool in women's health that has championed the feminist movement. But it is also a tool in women's health that has caused problems for thousands of individuals. In this episode, we're going to get into the problems with the pill and some of the things you can do if it's your choice to stay on it. In either case, my expert and guest for today's show, Dr. Ginger Nash, is the right person to have this conversation. She graduated from the National College of Naturopathic Medicine in 1998, and in her 20 years of clinical practice, has literally worked with thousands of women on natural hormone balance without the use of hormone replacement. She's recently launched a new brand called Feminology, which is the art and science of female hormones, along with her colleague, Dr. Tara Nyack. Together, these two doctors interweave the scientific knowledge behind natural medicine and the art of helping women heal. It is my absolute pleasure to introduce you to Dr. Ginger Nash.
Dr. Ginger Nash, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thank you, Dr. Megan Walker. It's great to be here, and I'm super excited to learn more and talk more about our topic today.
Well, it'll be really great to have the conversation. And I just have to say before we get started, your voice is so familiar to me because I have this old set of recordings that I got from Soroyal at one point, and you had taught one of the courses.
And women's health courses.
Right. And yeah. I've always been like, so you've been playing in my car for years, just so you know. Now, you've been a naturopathic doctor for almost 20 years or over 20 years now, and you're launching a brand new brand called Feminology. I want to get into both, but maybe you can just take us through the story that brought you to naturopathic medicine and then where you are now at the brink of launching and just launched something really new and fascinating.
Well, at the tender age of 24, I was having totally irregular cycles. And this was back in the olden days of no health insurance. I was a graduate student in the history of medicine, actually, which was a really great background to have, in my opinion, to go into naturopathic medicine, because I didn't come in with a lot of the insecurities about being sort of the bastard stepchild in the medical world. I knew that there were over 400 homeopathic and naturopathic colleges at the turn of the 19th century in North America. So I was so happy to have that background. But when I was 24 and I was in grad school, I was developing, unknownst to me, a huge ovarian cyst. And I needed emergency gynecological surgery. And I happened to get out of the hospital on my 25th birthday. I had an ovary and fallopian tube removed, and it was quite a large cyst, like 29 centimeters. And so it's really amazing, though. I've never had another experience like this in my life where it was really a true epiphany. I remember laying in bed, looking up at the ceiling, and I had been working as a research assistant for a professor in the women's studies department who was writing a book about naturopathic medicine. And so I knew that the schools existed. And at that time, only Southwest was only a year old, and Portland and Bastyr were, of course, up and running. And I just decided, like then and there in the middle of the night, you know, as I'm laying, looking down at my abdomen with 28 staples in it, and I'm thinking, there's got to be a better way to address these imbalances in hormones. And part of that journey was, you know, being on the birth control pill, being what I call birth control damaged or pill damaged, and recognizing that this approach was not really working for my body, and ended up, you know, putting me on the trajectory of natural medicine. So like many of us in the field, right, we have our own health issues that we've worked through to get us to this point. So I really never looked back. I applied for the colleges the very next day. I got the brochures, and then I interviewed at Southwest and Portland and Bastyr, and I ended up going to what was then NCNM, and National College of Naturopathic Medicine in Portland. And I've always been inspired to work with women and women's health issues and hormonal imbalances. Absolutely.
Well, it's so interesting how many of us have those personal stories that brought us here. And I think there's a power to that and a passion that we can bring to the table.
Absolutely.
When it's personal for us.
Absolutely. I mean, the people that do work with autoimmune conditions often have suffered autoimmune conditions themselves. And, you know, it's really, it comes from a different place when you've lived through something. I mean, not that we can't treat other things. I mean, thank goodness I've never had Lyme disease, because I treat a ton of Lyme disease and pathogens being in Connecticut. But, you know, it brings a different level of understanding and empathy, obviously, to working with conditions and patients that have some of the same struggles that we've been through.
And so tell me now a little bit more about this new brand that you're launching called Feminology. What's it about?
Well, it's really about, I mean, our tagline is the art and science of female hormones. So I have a partner, Dr. Tara Nyack. She's another naturopathic physician. She graduated several years ago from University of Bridgeport. And we both felt that it was necessary to sort of expand the conversation in the natural medicine world around women's health issues, kind of in the context of our culture. So we're interested in the intersection of women's health, but also the way women are treated by society, some of our cultural assumptions, some things like class and race. And so we're really looking at a larger aspect of women's health, but we're also grounded in holistic medicine, in naturopathic medicine, and in the ideas that, you know, sustain us all, that women are, you know, different from men, obviously, biologically, and that there is this really subtle, beautiful balance and art of understanding how female hormones work and don't work, and why so many women are suffering with hormonal imbalances. So we really wanted to draw more conversation out of women about their own lived experiences in their bodies and really get into some of the interconnections between genetics, epigenetics, the culture, and women's hormones.
Well, I love that. And you know what? There is such a connection. And I had this experience last week. So one of my patients, and I promise there's an appropriate segue here, but one of my patients came in and she was really disappointed. And she said, my husband has canceled his vasectomy. And I was like, okay, well, let's talk about that a little bit more. And she's like, he's freaking out that, you know, one in every 200,000 has this complication and one
oh,
every.
Yeah.
So he's insisting I just go back on the birth control pill. And it took like every bit of control. Like I maintained a level of professionalism, but I was like, this is such an injustice. I was like, did you hand him the side effects of the birth control pill for him to review that?
Into therapist mode where you're like, and how did you feel about his decision to cancel his vasectomy?
I was like, really? I mean, there's risks to everything, but I feel like women have been absorbing risks to their hormonal health for an extended period of time. And collectively, as a society, we kind of go, oh, well, you know, it's fine. Yeah. There's these random things that happen, but it won't happen to you. But it happens to a lot of people. And I know you have some really passionate ideas around the birth control pill. And I'd love to chat about those, because I think one of the disservices that is done to women is we actually don't have honest conversations about these things. And I think there's sometimes some inconvenient truths about birth control, but it's worth being honest.
Totally. And, you know, one of the first things I always say when I talk about this topic is that, you know, I'm pro-woman, I'm a feminist, I'm pro-sex. It's not about, you know, not allowing women to make choices that is, you know, empowering for their own health and their sexuality and their decisions around childbearing. Absolutely not, right? But there is a ton of information, like you say, that is not really given to women. And they're not getting that from their gynecologists 99.9% of the time. And women don't really know. They don't really know. I mean, I just had a patient recently, 19-year-old girl, who for the last about 2.5 years has been bounced around on 5 different birth control pills. And she's gained 80 pounds. And she obviously had a predisposition toward developing PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. But, you know, when I did her labs, it's like I had to say to her, like, you have a raging case of PCOS. You know, her testosterone is elevated, her DHEA is elevated, her insulin is totally elevated. And I'm sure that these things can be triggered by the use of synthetic hormones. And they're not even really hormones in a sense. They're more like drugs, and they've been talked about for many years as if they're just, you know, oh, they're just hormones. It's just like what your body produces, but it's absolutely not. It's a completely different molecule. And in some cases, you know, it can really wreak havoc across the entire endocrine system. I mean, nutritional deficiencies are just the very beginning. That's just scratching the surface. And that's some of the time women are aware that, you know, the birth control pill can deplete B vitamins and make you more at risk for cervical cancer. And if you smoke, in addition to that, it's really a bigger risk. But really my deeper concerns about the pill is that it really throws off the entire balance of the endocrine system. So your thyroid gets involved, your hypothalamic pituitary axis gets involved, your adrenals can get involved. You know, it's very, very comprehensive, the effects. And it does prevent ovulation, but what it does in addition to that is suppresses the entire natural monthly rhythm that I believe is so essential for true women's health. And you're absolutely right. The onus falls on women the great majority of the time, of course, because we're the ones that can get pregnant. And if you don't want to get pregnant, it's, you know, it's on you to be sure that your birth control method is, you know, is effective. But for a lot of women, I don't think they'd necessarily make the same decision. And that was the case with this 19-year-old patient that I just started working with. She said, I never would have taken the pill if I had known that my whole body was going to just go into this total tailspin. So absolutely, we both, Dr. Tara and myself, we We spend a lot of time, as you know, as a naturopathic physician, speaking with our patients and really getting an understanding of what their lives and their lifestyles and their health goals are really all about. So it's not like we just make these blanket statements like no birth control pills ever. But if we can talk to a woman or especially a young girl and find out what other methods might work just as well for them and not cause all these problems to their bodies, then absolutely we encourage that type of approach.
And to be clear, because I know this is what happens when I talk about dairy in my practice, is I can tell by the look on people's faces, they're like, oh, that's too bad for other people, but I have no problem with dairy.
Yeah.
Does the birth control pill affect everyone and then to varying degrees?
Yeah, I mean, it does affect everyone, of course. But some women find that it doesn't have the, you know, really intense side effects that it does have for other women. And, you know, speaking from my own experience, you know, those hormones that I had been taking for 6 years and the synthetic estrogen and the progestins really put such a tremendous burden on the liver to metabolize those drugs properly. Then if you've got imbalances in the microbiome and you're not clearing them, you know, you're just getting really, really a lot of exposure to pro-inflammatory compounds and molecules and metabolites that can change your metabolism, change your thyroid function, change your brain and mood and your libido. And so, yeah, I mean, that all happened to me. I ended up with this huge cyst, which was, you know, pretty dramatic. You're right, not every woman. So it's, again, it's all individual. And that's what we excel in, is individual recommendations. And so we have to evaluate what's, and some women come in and they just don't like the idea of it. And they feel on some level that they're disconnected from, you know, an inner voice, an inner truth, an inner intuition, whatever you want to call it, your inner doctor, you know, and they want to get off the pill even if they're not having all these metabolic problems, you know. So it's obviously a case-by-case scenario.
It's funny you mentioned that last piece, because that was entirely my experience being on the pill. As I felt, I don't know how else to describe it, but I've said this so many times to people. I've said it's like I'm disconnected from my true self. Like, yeah. It's like there's this barrier between this intuition and all of these different elements when I was on the birth control pill. And it was so obvious to me, and I came off it and I felt amazing. And I since had genetic testing done. And what was interesting about it is one of the chief geneticists in the lab that we worked with in Toronto, he called me when he got me my results and he was like, please tell me you're not on the birth control pill. And I said, I'm not. He's like, you just have the worst combination of SNPs for someone to be able to metabolize this, but your clotting risk is high, your cancer risk is high. He's like, this is just a horrible idea.
Wow.
And it was amazing. Yeah, exactly. But he called me personally, but he's like, it should be standard practice that we're looking at these SNPs in women and determining whether or not they're a good candidate for the birth control pill. Because I do think we have enough information at this point to decipher who's a good candidate and who isn't. And it is unfair to throw everyone into this pile of, oh, you'll just be fine.
Right. And you hit on the biggest issues, right? I mean, blood clots. Migraines is another one. You know, if you're a migraine sufferer, you're at much higher risk for blood clotting problems being on synthetic hormones. And then, of course, the detox SNPs and all the information and the data that we have now about our individual predispositions. Absolutely. Absolutely. And especially since these companies can test us for such an inexpensive amount, you know, we should use it to good use and for natural medicine instead of, you know, selling that data to big pharma and using it to develop more drugs that are going to have more side effects.
I know. It's like this head against the wall type irony. Totally. 100%. You mentioned in that description of some of the things that the birth control pill interferes with, this notion of the importance of monthly rhythms. And
yes,
I feel like so many of us grew up with these cultural messages that were like, ugh, you're on the period, or like, you know, they,
right.
If you type,
you're PMSing, this, you're PMSing. Hormonal. I typed in
menstruation into Adobe stock images yesterday, and it threw me back like 1200 images of women on the floor in like dire pain. And I was like, well, right there, like that's it right there. And so can we just like put pause on the common narrative and like really delve into what this could actually be if we would embrace this as opposed to trying to push ourselves away.
Absolutely. And actually we're in our Facebook group, we have a Feminology Facebook group, which I would encourage all of you listening that are interested in this kind of information to please join us. We're in the midst of a new moon cycle, a 30-day video series. Every day we're getting on and talking about what's happening at each point of the month. Today is day 22. So yesterday was day 21. I did a whole thing on PMS positive and about changing the cultural notions of being in this PMS period. Yes. And today I'm going to talk about some tips to help with some of the common symptoms of PMS. But yesterday I was really talking about how for me, and I know for a lot of women, it's a more sensitive time of the month, and how that is really important to embrace and, you know, recognize that our sensitivity makes us who we are. And it's absolutely not encouraged by the culture we live in, all the messages about women being too sensitive or too overreactive, et cetera, et cetera. So really encouraging women at this point of the month, when you're in that PMS phase, especially, to, you know, take time to just connect with yourself and give yourself the room to feel and give yourself the room to be sensitive. And especially as caregivers, which, you know, most women are by definition, that's a big part of what we do, whether it's in our personal lives or our professional lives. You know, our sensitivity helps us empathize. It helps us connect. It helps us, you know, connect with the non-human creatures on our planet. And really what we all know deep, deep down is that this world needs more connection and more understanding and more empathy. So it's kind of bizarro, right, that this is seen as such a detriment as an aspect of our personalities. So I 1000% agree with you that we need to flip that on its head. And you know, of course, we don't want women to suffer, and there are very real things we can do to help the physical body. But I do encourage women to get in touch with those natural monthly rhythms and, you know, use the natural lifestyle and diet and nutritional support that we all spend so much time educating our patients about, so that this becomes like, oh, cool. I know I'm in this part of my cycle. This is what I know I need to do for myself. This is the decision I know I need to make. You know, maybe this isn't the best person to get involved with. You know, you really do get in touch with a deeper knowing about who you are as a woman and who you are as a human being. Because there's a reason we have these fluctuations in our monthly rhythms. You know, it's not just to, you know, make us more dramatic or more histrionic. It's like there's a real benefit to being sensitive. Absolutely.
Well, and I love that acknowledgement. I had someone in my practice last year, and she came in and we were talking about, I said, why are you on the birth control pill continuously? And she said, oh, you know what? It's a personal decision, but I'm an executive and I just can't let my emotions or fluctuations in my emotions get in my way of being effective. And again, I was like, okay, I'm going to hold it together.
Yeah. I mean, and that's a personal choice. And like, to be honest, like, I don't want to be judgmental, but it's that, okay, that's your choice. But like, what are you asking my advice around then? because if you're coming in and you're asking me for help with various issues, and I feel that the birth control pill or the IUD or your implant or whatever, you know, drugs you might be taking is an impediment to cure. I mean, this is our first objective as a naturopathic doctor, right? Is remove the impediments to cure, allow the body to self-heal. And, you know, that's fine if that's your decision, but I want you to know what the consequences of making that decision might be. And then, of course, it's up to women, you know, if they want to succeed in the business world and adhere to a certain model of success, you know, who are we, right, to tell them that they can't do that? But if they're coming to us for advice around certain health issues, you know, we've got to tell them what we think the consequences of some of their actions are. And eating dairy might be the thing that's, you know, like you said, the thing that's most problematic and most, important to address at first. You know, it might not be birth control. But certainly, and that's a good point, I think, you know, sometimes making some of the dietary changes, and my world and my background is steeped in biotherapeutic drainage and the eliminations of the body. And sometimes just working on that and getting those things to be at optimal functioning, you know, then maybe you won't have all the side effects of the birth control pill and you can stay on it continuously if that's your choice, you know. So it really depends on where people are at.
Yeah. And I agree with that. I say to women, listen, we both have colleagues who will say to people, you have to be off the pill. There's just, I can't treat you if you're on the pill. And I don't take that approach. I really believe that women have the right to make the decisions that are right for them. But I also ensure that they have access to all of the information that informs that decision, so that it's not biased. And so, you know, with that said, and trusting that women understand what's best for them, are there things that you generally, like, I'm going to call it a checklist, but are there things that you recommend? Like, listen, you're going to be on birth control pill, no problem. Here are the 10 things we need to make sure are working for you. Everything from elimination to nutrients. Like, what are the things that we really want to have women being aware of if that's the choice that they want to make?
Yeah. So a big focus for me is on the lymphatic system. So I'm always evaluating that. I use a whole body regulation thermography exam, and that does an amazing job of evaluating the health of the lymphatic flow. So I'm always telling women and men, but women especially, you know, the importance of exercise and daily activity, because that, you know, increases lymphatic flow by fivefold, whether it's rebounding or jogging or yoga or whatever. And then I also recommend dry skin brushing. I recommend infrared sauna. I recommend certain internal homeopathics to move the lymph. So the lymph is always, always, always part of my initial approach with women. And then, of course, diet. You know, there's no such thing as one anti-inflammatory diet or one hormonal health diet for every woman, but I understand her biochemical individuality. One of my mentors is Dr. Peter Diadamo. I worked in his clinic for 3 years alongside him, and I certainly am steeped in the blood type diet, but that's just the beginning. You know, I further specify things for women, and I do use a lot of genetic testing. So I really can come up with a very specific diet that's beneficial for, you know, overall health. But in my practice, obviously, I focus on hormones. So we're talking about, you know, the health of the microbiome and hormone clearance, the health of the liver, and then certainly things that are going to be anti-inflammatory in the gastrointestinal tract itself. So I always make dietary recommendations. And then if you're going to be on hormonal birth control, I would say probably the most important nutrients for me are B vitamins, of course, and magnesium. Magnesium is extremely important, as I'm sure you know, and it is a cofactor for so many different biochemical reactions in the body. And it's also one of the harder things to get in our diets at adequate levels. So I would have to say magnesium and B vitamins are the two biggest nutrients that I recommend for women overall, not just women that are on synthetic hormones, but certainly the amount of depletion of folic acid and the B vitamins when you're on those drugs are going to contribute to problems with methylation and detox. So absolutely got to get those nutrients on board.
And are these some of the same recommendations that you would have for women who are in HRT?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, women on HRT, I mean, there's a case where I really do feel like, okay, if you've had a hysterectomy or you've been, you know, suddenly gone into a radical shift into menopause, which most women don't. I mean, the perimenopausal changes usually last anywhere from a few months to a few years. And I have an online program, a 3-month extensive program specifically for perimenopausal and menopausal women. And what I usually find is that women that are struggling with all the various menopausal change symptoms can absolutely be addressed without HRT. So that's an area that if someone is using it, you know, I would say if they just had a hysterectomy and they've just got wicked, wicked hot flashes and they just need a little bit of that estrogen, I'm going to definitely evaluate them. I'm going to do, you know, whatever testing. And I know you wanted to get into that a little bit, but just to make sure that those estrogen levels are healthy. And then I would work to wean them off of it over, you know, maybe a 6 month to a year period, because, you know, once again, I truly believe that menopause is a natural transition. It's puberty in reverse, so it can be quite a roller coaster ride, but I don't think that it's healthy for women to be continuing to take hormone well into their postmenopausal years. Absolutely not.
Yeah, it was interesting. I co-hosted a webinar with Cheryl Burnett a few weeks ago, and she's another naturopathic doctor. And she was talking about menopause as a condition of oxidative stress. And it was actually really fascinating to look at the correlation between markers of higher oxidative stress in women and correlations to worsening symptoms of menopause.
That totally makes sense.
Right, and it
totally
speaks to what you're saying. Like, if we go upstream and treat the cause of the problem, look at that. We don't have to supplement on synthetic hormones.
And the synthetic hormones are causing more pro-oxidative changes, and they deplete antioxidants. And so you're working at cross purposes. Absolutely.
Right. We're stuck again in that model of just treating the symptoms. I want to go back to one thing that you mentioned, because I understand this connection, but I think for a lot of people, they'd be like, oh, this lymphatic system, this is a new concept for me. What is it? And then why is this a relevant concept when we're talking about clearing and detoxification and overall health as it pertains to hormones?
Yeah, absolutely. I wrote an article for NDNR that came out in February. And if you just search up my name and lymphatic health, and it's actually specifically pertaining to hormonal health.
We'll post it in the show notes.
Yeah, that would be great. So you can get more detail there. But the lymphatic system is a whole separate circulatory system unto itself without a heart to pump it. So that's why exercise and things that are going to move the lymph, like dry skin brushing and certain homeopathics, are essential, because we don't necessarily pump the lymph if we're not actively, you know, encouraging the body to do that. But the lymphatic system is really important for our immune health. It moves all of the immunoglobulins around. It helps in chronic infections, of course, and in actually killing precancerous cells or even cancer cells. So the lymphatic system has these very delicate channels, and when they flow through the lymph nodes, that's where all of the specific immunity turns on. So it's really important for our overall immune health, and it's very important for detoxifying and elimination. It is the system that interfaces with the capillary beds and picks up all the toxins that are secreted from what we say intracellularly. So the cell goes through all these various biochemical mechanisms. And then when your cell membranes are healthy, those toxins are pushed out. And then it's up to the lymphatic system to pick up those toxins and remove them from the body, right? So you want your lymphatic system to be working really well, because we all know, and like you just said, your guest last week talked about the pro-oxidative state. We're all living in a toxic world. We all need constant attention to the body's ability to clear these toxins. So the lymphatic system is really, really an important part of that. And then with regards to hormones specifically, as many of us know, there's a lot of estrogen imbalances because the environment stimulates the estrogen receptors. There's a lot of toxins and plastics and phthalates and PCBs and all those things that come from the environment that can stimulate the estrogen receptor and cause a lot of excess estrogenic activity. And then progesterone is not deficient necessarily, although that's certainly the case postmenopausally when we stop ovulating, or if you have PCOS and you're not ovulating, or for any other reason you're not ovulating, you're not getting that progesterone to balance out the estrogen. So the lymphatic system is attracted to more non-polar molecules. So it helps translocate the progesterone around in the body. So even if you have adequate levels of progesterone, if you're not moving it around, so basically I think of it as like a way to optimize your progesterone levels as well. I mean, it's not going to raise your progesterone levels, but it's going to help you move your body's progesterone around in the body. And especially if you have very little, you want to be sure that that's the most, you know, optimal system that's going to move the progesterone around and hit all those receptors in the brain and in the tissues, the breast, the uterus, the ovaries, the fatty tissue, et cetera.
Yeah, that's so fascinating. So would you, if you were looking at that and you had someone where you're like, oh, it's like they're exhibiting a relative deficiency in progesterone, but that's not what you're seeing on any lab work, would you start with lymphatics?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, honestly, I start with lymphatics with everyone. I mean, it's like an obsession of mine, and for good reason, I think, because it really is, you know, unable to be measured in blood work. It's not something that traditional medicine is really thinking all that much about. Certainly Ayurvedic medicine and traditional Chinese medicine are better at in terms of these systemic systems that are, you know, affect the whole body all at once. So it's really something I recommend every woman start to think about. And of course, with regards to breast health as well, because the lymphatic system flows into the breast so heavily and our breast tissue has so much lymph. And who knows, this may be part of the reason there's not really anybody interested in doing this kind of research, but epidemiologically, it would be fascinating to see where women have more toxin exposure and more problems with lymphatic flow if they have higher rates of breast cancer. I mean, we know that the breast, the fatty tissue of the breast, is storing some of these really pro-inflammatory oxidative molecules. So,
yeah, I love this. What a fascinating conversation and a different take on it. You mentioned in there really briefly about, you know, we can't do any lab testing with respect to lymphatics, but are there other tests that you typically run with women to get a really good handle on where they are at with respect to their overall health?
Yeah. And the whole body system that I use actually measures 18 points of the lymph. So it is wonderful to see. And we get three different sort of like, is the lymphatic system inflamed and sort of acutely uncomfortable and, you know, dealing with some more acute inflammation? Is it sort of in the middle where it's sort of depositing toxins into the tissues and causing edema and those kind of problems? Or is it totally blocked and not flowing well at all? And that's what we see with the thermography as a rigid signal. And that's the most sort of ominous, because it means that the nervous system isn't even able to regulate the lymphatic flow in such a way that it can, you know, help with all these issues with the immune system, with the eliminations, and with hormonal balance. So I definitely, that's part of the reason I've become so focused on the lymphatic system, is because I've been using this system of thermography for about 7 years now. But as far as hormone testing, I've recently begun to use the Dutch test. And I know a lot of people are getting interested in this test. It's a newer test. It's a dried urine test. And it doesn't look at salivary levels of hormones, which I've used in the past mostly for cortisol, because as we have been discussing, our female hormones, estrogen, progesterone, fluctuate so much throughout the month, it's really hard to get a good sense of what's going on. But for certain cases, conditions, where I'm concerned about the pro-inflammatory metabolites of estrogens, the Dutch test is really helpful. It shows also some of the cortisol metabolites. It also looks at androgen metabolites. So like, I just ran one on a woman who's had a lot of hair loss. It also looks at melatonin and some of the basic progesterone and estrogen levels. So I've been using that test. I can't really speak as an authority on it because I've only run about 5 tests, but I'm liking what I'm learning so far. And it does afford some benefits that you can't necessarily see in the blood, of course, because you're just looking at frank levels in the blood instead of looking at how the body's actually metabolizing the hormones, which is what the urine tests are better at evaluating.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying the Dutch test.
Yeah, you're using it too.
Yeah,
cool.
I use it a lot. And I get such clinically actionable information from it. And I've had a few patients, and although it's not meant to be a monitoring test, we've done mm-hmm. it, we've made significant changes, and then they've been in a position where they have both wanted to, and it's been relevant, where we've rerun it and seen yep. really significant changes for them. So it's,
awesome.
It's neat. And it's neat to have the opportunity where you can rerun some of these tests, because they are sometimes a little bit pricey, and actually see the changes. And I'm sure you agree, if you can't take action on a test, there's really no point on running things.
Right.
So it's nice when we start to have these tools that give us insight as clinicians. So
absolutely. But I do want to mention too, because I'm aghast sometimes at the patients that come in that have been to other health professionals, and they have, you know, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 worth of testing. And I really try to minimize the amount of testing that I do and really focus on taking a good clinical history. And again, this is where naturopaths really excel, because we talk to our patients. And I think especially with something as subtle as hormones and the interplay, we haven't even gotten into, you know, mood dysregulation and neurotransmitters and stress levels and what's going on in someone's life. And then you can really get so, so much information just from taking a really good clinical history. And I, for years, you know, just prescribed all kinds of protocols just based on my knowledge of the physiology and my knowledge of human nature and talking to women about what's going on with their health, you know? So I do encourage the use of specific tests, but I just also want to say that I'm not a huge test person. And I think that can lead you and the patients down into these rabbit holes sometimes. That's just like, what, you know, like, is this really helpful? All this information, if it's not going to, like you said, have actionable, changes, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really great perspective.
Yeah.
Question for you, after being in practice for the amount of time that you have and seeing literally thousands of women move through your protocols, what do you want your legacy to be?
Oh, I know. That was an amazing thing to think about. I think my legacy, if I could say optimally, I would love to have it be that I just helped women understand themselves better and be in touch with themselves more and just make healthy choices for themselves and not really have to think about their health so much. Because I think one of the things that we as women all fall prey to so easily, and it's one of my beefs with the whole wellness world in general, is this notion that we're supposed to be doing everything right all the time. You know, we can get into such a head trip about perfectionism. So I guess I would love it if my legacy was like, you know what? She taught me how to take care of myself, and then I didn't need her anymore, and I didn't need to think about my health so much. You know, it just becomes habit and second nature rather than having to adhere to this like strict routine of 50,000 different self-care, you know, therapies on a daily basis, you know, because there's a lot of other work to do in the world, and we need to be healthy in order to be able to do it, but we need to be out there in the world enjoying our lives and not just hyper focused on every little aspect of our health, in my opinion. So this is why I always have to get new patients because people get better and then I don't see them for a year, you know, and I don't encourage people to become dependent on me to make every decision about their health, because I really try to educate women to figure that out on their own. So
amen to that. It's funny because I have patients come in and they go and they tell me, share their goals. And then I'll say, I just want you to know my goal for you is that we don't see each other within the next year. And they're sort of aghast that I would even suggest that. But you know what? This should be a self-sustaining journey. And if we're teaching you how to swim upstream and not constantly reactive to what's happening in the river, then you should be able to do this on your own. So I love that. I love hearing that from fellow practitioners. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is. And it's really, you know, I mean, obviously, if I have somebody who's very, very sick and multiple diagnoses and scleroderma and rheumatoid arthritis and IBS, you know, okay, you're going to see me once a month for a little while. And then we try to space out the appointments to seasonally, you know, every 3 months and then once a year. So it's not that I don't support people through the initial stages, because there's a lot to learn. I mean, you know, right? Some people come in and they really have no idea how to eat. They have no idea how to take care of themselves. They have no idea what to do to calm their health issues down. But the ultimate goal is absolutely, like, you know, treat thyself as much as possible. Although that doesn't mean Dr. Google, right? Because we have to fight against that as well.
Absolutely.
On October 26th and 27th, we're doing something really special in Toronto. For those of you who have been hanging out on the Anthropology podcast for a period of time, you know that we are driven by the mission that when people are well, they can change the world. On October 26th and 27th, I'm going to be hosting an event in Toronto called Impact Lives. This event has been designed for clinician entrepreneurs and wellness entrepreneurs in general who want to learn how to amplify their business. We are bringing in keynote speakers from across North America and implementation session leaders to help you not only become more inspired with respect to your business, but to learn new skills that you can start to implement right away. Whether you want to launch your own podcast, write your first book proposal, or create a system for patient acquisition or new clients that takes your business to the whole new level, we have got your back. Impact Lives is a two-day event taking place at the Globe and Mail Center in downtown Toronto in a stunning venue that overlooks the city. It's going to bring together 150 passionate entrepreneurs looking to take the lives of their families, themselves, and the people that they work with to a whole new level. For those of you who have been loyal listeners, I would love to have you there. There is a coupon code that I am releasing just for listeners of the Anthropology podcast. That is Anthropology20. And if you go to impactlivesevent.com, you can use that coupon code to receive 20% off the ticket price for the event happening in October. I cannot wait to see action takers, go-getters, and anthropologists like yourselves there when we gather together for Impact Lives.
I think this is a really great place to transition to the second portion of this interview. And I say second portion, it's just sort of, it's the tail end, but I call this section our key performance indicators or KPIs. So just like we would have these in business, I believe we have these things that we do with respect to our health that keep us on track and are really good indicators or metrics. So I've got six rapid questions for you with respect to health and self-care.
Awesome.
So the first one is, do you have a consistent evening routine? And if so, can you share?
Evening routine?
Evening routine. Yeah, I know. Yeah. You know what? We're so obsessed with the morning. And I was like, a successful morning comes from a successful evening.
Well, I try to make most of my meals at home. So dinner is always, you know, we eat out about once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks. And then I always take my magnesium with dinner. So I take 3 capsules of my buffered magnesium with taurine. I find that's the best for my body. And magnesium, as I said earlier, is probably my favorite nutrient and the only thing I've taken consistently for 20 years. So I take my magnesium with dinner. And then depending on what's going on with my son, whether it's during the school year, I try to spend some time with him, just some quiet time. I definitely try to stay off my phone for at least an hour and the computer for at least an hour before I want to go to bed. Ideally, I would love to be asleep by 10:30, 11. Sometimes that gets pushed to closer to 11, 11:30, but I really do like to get to bed by 11 at the latest. And I'm actually a pretty good sleeper, I have to say. So I don't really take any supplements before bed, but I do know that a lot of people take melatonin or 5-HTP. I've never really had problems with sleep. So I'm mostly just my evening supplement regimen is magnesium. And then just trying to stay off the screens, you know, that's really the only thing. And then just have some quiet time. I usually bathe at night. I'm not a shower person at all. So I love taking baths. I love putting essential oils and Epsom salts in my baths. I often do that in the winter, especially living in the Northeast in the cold. So I don't really have a huge amount of consistent stuff that I do. I do meditate, but that's mostly in the morning. And sometimes if I am having a little bit of a stressful time, I'll do just a little alternate nostril breathing before I go to bed. So that's a great way to just calm the nervous system down. For those of you that don't know what that is, you can YouTube it, alternate nostril breathing. It's just a pranayama technique that balances both halves of the brain and really can help with anxiety or stress. So that might be something I'll do if I'm having a particularly stressful stretch of time. But no, my nighttime routine is pretty simple. I do watch a lot of movies. My husband is a film scholar and literature scholar, so we watch lots and lots of movies. And of course, the golden age, the third golden age of television. So we watch a lot of series too. So I find that really enjoyable. I try not to watch too much upsetting stuff, but I do love to, you know, have that connection. And my son has actually become quite a connoisseur of films and good television as well. So we'll watch stuff in the evening as well. So that's kind of family time.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice to have the things that you can decompress with.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Fiction or nonfiction? What are you reading right now?
Right now, I'm reading a book of essays by Morgan Jenkins. This will be my undoing. I recently completed a Me and White Supremacy challenge that was run through Instagram. And I was recommended, this book was recommended as part of that. So I'm reading about racism and white supremacy as my nonfiction. I also just finished a book that was given to me for my birthday by Jessamine Ward about a family living in the Bayou in Louisiana. I'm trying to remember the name. But anyway, I read both fiction and nonfiction. I tend to read both at the same time, but I definitely can get lost in a fiction book. And I just finished Jhumpa Lahiri's latest book, The Lowland, which I just loved, an amazing story. I read a lot of women writers. I've noticed that I enjoy reading women writers in particular. So I don't read a lot of poetry, or my husband also loves poetry, and I've always felt like I don't really get poetry. I need some help. So I mostly stick to novels and nonfiction, and I read about health, definitely. Who doesn't in our field? But I also read about social issues as well.
Yeah, I like that balance. I can only take so much health reading.
Yeah, totally.
What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
I don't know. I have rescued 5 dogs in my life. I'm a huge dog lover. I love pit bulls. I became in love with the breed after rescuing my first pit bull about 6-7 years ago. And, you know, I'm definitely one of those white women who love pit bulls. There's a whole comedy sketch that like 5 people have told me I have to see, like, that everybody's afraid of these dogs except, you know, certain demographics. And I definitely fit that. So, I mean, I would say I've also rescued a bunch of stray dogs. I'm kind of a dog magnet. So I don't know. I consider that I wouldn't know if it's badass or if it's just like, part of my magnetism is to dogs.
I love it.
Yeah.
And last question for you, entrepreneurism. Are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
Good question. I think I have learned. I was really terrified when I graduated naturopathic medical school to go into business on my own. And I actually was looking for a practitioner to join forces with, and I just never found the right fit. So I just said, well, I guess I got to do this on my own. And I feel like I've learned. I don't feel like I was born with it. And, you know, I think that it is a major, major learning process. And I've spent years and a lot of money getting good advice about how to become an entrepreneur and how to do it in a way that's consistent with what I want out of my life. Absolutely.
Well, I love that answer. And it's true to form. And we have a passion and something we need to put out into the world. This is a vehicle to do it. And if it's something you need to learn about, you know, you pick up the tools and you learn how to do it. I love that. Dr. Nash, it's been a pleasure having you. We've covered.
It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, such a breadth of topics and such interesting information. We'll definitely hook up that NDNR article in the show notes. But where can people learn more about what you're up to and connect with your Feminology Facebook group? Because I know you're up to really cool things over there.
Yeah, so there's a Feminology page and there's a Feminology group, and there's a lot more activity in the group. So if you just searched Feminology on Facebook, you should be able to find me, Dr. Ginger Nash and Dr. Tara Nyack. And we are also in the process of building a new website. We should be launching that in a few weeks, which will be feminology.org. And there'll be lots of great content. If you're not on Facebook, not everybody's on Facebook. We also have an Instagram feed, and our handle is Feminologists. And yeah, we're active on social media. As I said, we're in the middle of this 30-day series on the new moon cycle and hormone balance, and we'll be doing some other campaigns and providing hopefully really good information to women on a consistent basis. So please find me. Yes, absolutely. And if you also are interested in becoming a patient, I do lots of long distance phone calls and Skype meetings as well. And you can just Google me, and I'm all over the web. So thank you so much, Dr. Walker, for having me on. It's been a pleasure, and I hope we get to meet in person.
Absolutely. We'll absolutely make it happen.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Anthropology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.